Hi, how are you doing? That's right, I'm talking to you. Directly to you. And I was just wondering how you were doing. How are you doing today? The person that's listening to this, which I know who it is. There's only one person listening to this, and that's you. So this is a special recording for you. And only you, and I know who you are, and I know where you live. Welcome. Welcome to the Talk Talk with Dylan. This episode is brought to you by Wahlburgers. The TV show Wahlburgers is now on Netflix. That's right. I'm super excited to announce that Wahlburgers is on Netflix. So, if you haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet, go check it out. Wahlburgers on Netflix. How many seasons are on Netflix? Let's Netflix it to find out. Type in Wahlburgers. Wahlburgers. Not spelling it right because that's not coming up. Wahlburgers. 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 Here we go. Ooh, there's one season on Netflix, and it's, it's all on there. Every episode. There's 10 episodes. Good reviewer here. This is the best family reality show I have seen in ages. The love they feel for each other seems to shine like a beacon through the screen. Very funny as well. If you are a fan of Entourage, you are going to adore this. That's right. So if you were a fan of Entourage, you're going to adore this show. It's on A&E, Wahlburgers. It's about get up and close and personal with Boston's well-known family, the Wahlburgers, the Wahlbergs, as they manage a family-run burger. So it's Mark, Donnie, Paul. It's all of them. It's Johnny Elves, Johnny Danger, you know, the guy that was based on Johnny Danger, or Johnny Danger was based on him. Anyway, it's the whole crew, Wahlburgers. It's a new show. It's on Netflix. You can stream the whole season, season one Netflix. And that's Wahlburgers was sponsoring the Talk Talk with Dylan. So be sure to check it out. The paying our bills. All right. So my first guest is going to be Joe Wilson. Who is a video game designer, and he is making a game called Distorted Travesty. And the third game is about to be released in several months. Joe, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's it going?
It's been a pretty relaxing day. Just working on the game, actually.
Oh, yeah? That's cool. That's cool. Right, so are you pretty excited?
Yeah. It's been fun, and I get a little nervous about the final level, but I see that it's coming along really, really well, and I think it's gonna be great.
That's awesome. Everyone's like, everyone's excited. They're wanting to play it.
It's true.
You got a lot of fans.
Yeah, more than I ever expected.
That's great, though. That's great. They're going to get the word out there. You have like several Let's Play people pushing it too, right?
Yeah, there's going to be quite a bit. There's a good... I haven't found them all either. I think I have about 12 or 13 listed on my blog. I always like to list the Let's Players in a little page on my blog there. And I'm sure there's plenty I haven't found, but I'm surprised that there's even that many.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge amount right there. Everyone's lazy and they don't want to, you know, so like to have 13 of them actually make a Let's Play, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not everyone's lazy. Maybe it's just me. So you're a video game designer. You were born in, where were you born?
In Alabama, actually, Montgomery, Alabama. I don't remember anything about it.
You didn't live there long.
No, my family, they were both in the Air Force, and we were stationed in Germany for a while.
So when did you move to Germany?
I believe when I was either 2 or 3, but we weren't in Alabama the whole time. I think we were up in like Maine and in San Antonio or something like that. I don't remember the details of that actually. I just know that around 2 or 3, I was in Germany until I was right when I turned to 7. We moved back to the States.
So do you remember a lot about Germany?
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Before about 8 or 7 or 8, I don't remember. I can't piece together days like I can after that point. So a lot of Germany is just bits and pieces of things about, like, I remember we lived on this house or this apartment like on a hill, and down the bottom of the hill there was like this blackberry bush, and my mom and I would go down there to get blackberries to get blackberries for a pie, which by the time we got back, we didn't have enough for a pie.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing that same thing with the... Not in Germany, though. Anytime we'd go pick stuff, I would just eat it all. Strawberries and... yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I haven't done anything like that in last 2 decades.
Because in Texas, you can't. There's no berries in Texas.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, there's nothing here. It's like...
I don't know why people are here. It's just you can't live here.
Yeah, it's a barren land of Republicans. That's it.
It's all.
Yes.
But that's cool. That's really cool. I've never left the U.S. Thank God. I've always wanted to. So that's awesome that you got to. Do you ever want to go back?
So I haven't been out of the U.S. since then. I've been all over the U.S., east, west, coast, north, south, all over the place. Yeah. And, of course, because of the internet, I've been able to talk to a ton of people from around the world, and including those who play my game.
What's your average outside of the U.S.? Where are they from? How are they finding your game, but where are they from?
So there's a few from, I forget the country, in South America. But actually, it's interesting. Most of my players actually come from Germany.
Okay.
Or at least around that area in Europe.
So is that a coincidence, or is there something to that?
Purely coincidence.
Did you leave a trace of yourself there?
I don't think so.
Clues to get back to you?
Clues, yes. That must be it. That's where I was meant to be.
That's
it. Would definitely interesting. Definitely interesting to think about what it would be like if my mom didn't get stationed back in in San Antonio.
Yeah, Hitler would have still.
Yes, of course.
Hitler would have gotten away.
Yeah, well, definitely. Yeah, I would definitely know German as my second language if I was up there, though. That'd be interesting.
Did you ever learn any of it?
I only know a little bit of German. I'm not fluent with it. It's kind of like the way I know Spanish. If I hear somebody speaking it, I can pick up certain words. But as far as like actually speaking it, no, I would need a dummies to German translator.
Yeah. You have those on your cell phone now. You can just... You really don't need to learn a language anymore.
I've done that. I've somebody who spoke Spanish.
I need to do that.
I translated with my phone before, and it worked.
That's what I need. That's what I need to start doing. But the people that from other countries, the difference between fans of your game, Americans versus anybody else, is there a difference? Do they take something from it that we don't, or vice versa?
That's an interesting question. I don't think so. Not that I've noticed, but it's really hard to pick up certain things like that, empathetic things like that, through text.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what makes my fans in the U.S. passionate about it as opposed to those in Germany.
So for those that don't know, Distorted Travesty, explain that game a little bit. It's a platformer.
Yeah, it's kind of like a 2D side-scrolling platformer with a focus on like really fast-paced combat. The first game was super technical and just all over the place. It's kind of a mess, and I kind of sort of see why it picked up and why it and I kind of don't. I think it's how open it is, and I think it's just how I think people saw it was so genuine. Maybe anyway, it's really hard to pinpoint exactly what people really like about the game. Like
Your dedication that you've put. So when did you start the first one?
I started the first one in 2009 actually.
Okay, so you've been going at it for a long time.
Yeah, off and on. I would have finished the third game by now if I had actually been continually working on it. But there's a lot of times I've just put it down for a while. It wasn't quite like that with the first game. I finished the first game a lot quicker. It was also not as much content, but it still was a more steady pace.
Yeah.
One of the things that drew people in was its difficulty. It's kind of like its not selling point, but we'll say one of its selling points we'll say is the difficulty. Some of it is a bit of bullshit, I think, when I look back at the first game. There's a bit of a, you know, there's a hair bit of fake difficulty there, and I tried to address that with the third game.
What have you, so like, between the first game and the third game, you've learned quite a bit. The second game, though, it wasn't, you said it wasn't very long, right? It's like...
Yeah, so initially when I started work on the second game, it was only meant to be a joke. It was meant to be like this little 10-minute thing, and then it's over, and it's like, yay, the heroes win. And the whole shtick was that you play as the protagonist's girlfriend from the first game, and it's just this little, it's supposed to be this little joke. But like within making those mechanics, I was like, well, I have this game here. So I started writing up like an actual like script for the game, and then I thought, I have so many ideas that I didn't do, and like ways I can address this series again, or this world again, and do it, try it a different way, and try the Metroidvania type of thing that I didn't really quite do with the first game. And so that happened. So like I wrote, before I finished the second game, I wrote like the script for like pretty much both games right there. And I was like, oh, I know how I want this to end. I had a really good ending for it all.
You wrote the second and third script all at once, you say?
Yes.
Okay.
And the third script did change, of course, a bit. And then it was really, really early on with the third game script. Like, it was right around where I released the demo of the third game that I changed parts of the end. Of course, what those are, they have no context for what I changed, so they don't know what that is meaningless to anyone hearing this, really. But some parts of the script did change around when I released the demo. And that had nothing to do with feedback. It was just like I released it and I thought, I have a different idea of where I want this to go.
Has it changed from the initial game? I mean, you've expanded. It was only going to be one game, right?
Yes, there's only been one game. The second game, just a little joke. And then, there's not actually a real sequel.
But the joke's on you because, you know, yeah. 4 years later, you're just...
you're
finishing the third one.
That's right.
But something about it obviously inspired you to keep going. First of all, what's the story of Distorted Travesty?
So the story, and you learn us about, let's say, a third of the way to the first game, okay, we'll start at the beginning. The protagonist, they get thrown into this video game world, and then they're like, wait, where are we? What is this? And they try to figure out, a way to get out of this. They just want to get home. And it comes to find out that they are stuck in a program designed to make video game worlds, like MMO style worlds, kind of like a Second Life type of deal there, but with more rules attached to it, video game like rules attached to it. So you can think kind of Matrix there. And so throughout the thing they soon figure out that there's technically no way out of it. And so while the first game was focusing on trying to shut the program down and get out of it, of course, they realize that they can't do that. The second and specifically the third game are about maintaining it and keeping it going.
Keeping the machine going?
Yeah, because there's no way out. And this is like their new home, so they're trying to protect that.
So that's pretty sad.
Yeah, it does. And
is that a big part of it? The fact that sort of this thing that they can never get out of, so they have to make do with what they have?
Yeah, that is kind of a sad point when you think about it like that.
Does that come across for many people? Or is that just a little bit of understated?
I think I saw a little bit of that from some of the feedback, some of the things of the way people saw it. I think overall, no one really saw it as, like, most people didn't really see it as this sad, sad ordeal there.
Maybe that's just my mind.
Yeah, it also had to do with the tone of the first game. The tone of the first game is very, like, upbeat, and it had its moments where it kind of went, like, a bit dark, and then it kind of just brought it back out of that.
Now, the third one gets pretty dark, right? I mean, there's times where the...
So, the people who play the demo will see that it will kind of see that descent into that. It starts very much like the first game, very happy-go-lucky, and then as it moves on, it really does get into a different tone, and I won't spoil that anymore from there, but yeah, it doesn't end how it begins. Like the ending portions of the game are way different from the beginning portions as far as tone.
And this is the final chapter, right?
Yes, this arc ends completely. And it's also my departure from these sort of like hobby fan game type of things, because the game is based in sprite rips. Like, the game wouldn't be what it is without the sprite rips. It's kind of it's referencing other things that make you think. And sometimes, like, when I make a level with certain like tile sets from other games, I'll make a segment of it, like one room or one screen that is almost a direct replica of something from the original game. It's kind of like a throwback. And then I do what I need. Then I do my version of that. But it is my departure from that, and I'll be doing more original titles after this.
So is there any worry that your fans, because I was on your blog and reading some of the comments, and there was a lot of, it seems like there was a lot of people with concern in there. They were like, oh, I want, what's the next game? And is it going to be, you know, is it going to be the platformer sprite type thing? And are you worried that your fans are going to, there'll be some drop off, or are they just going to get used to it and have to come on with you?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what, if they're following me or if they're following the game. I think there's a little bit of both, of course. I just don't know how much that split is. But I'm going to be doing all sorts of things. I have a lot of ideas. It just depends on what I feel I can do, either alone or with a small group, or I may just join with another group of people. And instead of being, you know, the sole guy, you know, I may work on someone else's idea for a little bit and see how that goes. I've done that before in the past, so try it again.
How old were you when you made your first game or helped make a game?
I guess that was actually when I was in school.
Okay.
Yeah, that's far, far back.
So you went to school for game design?
I did, and I don't recommend anyone else do that. I think if you want to go into the arts, I think a traditional art background is really important, and then you can kind of go more into the technical side of, like, if you want to do 3D art, texturing, modeling, rigging, all that stuff. And if you want to do code, I think doing a computer science and engineering degree is much more beneficial to those who want to get into that. I don't know how it is now with the game design schools, but the way I saw it back then, they would teach you their method of programming rather than a more universal method, which is much better. And it may be different now. I haven't really studied up on the schools lately, so I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, I really don't know. My brother-in-law, you know, he went to school for it a while back, and that got him to places where I don't think he could have gone with a trajectory. Like, he went to actually an actual, you know, video game school.
Okay.
And then he bounced around from, like, different... he went on to Neversoft and a bunch of different things like that. So for him, but it's always, yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I hear. I don't know too much about the that industry, but as far as the entertainment industry, whatever media it is, it's sort of kind of the same thing. It's like there's a lot of different, like, it can either work or it doesn't. It's not always foolproof.
For sure.
So why did you decide to, I guess go on your own starting out? Have you worked for some companies?
I have. I won't list them, but I have worked with others in the past, with studios. And I've done a bit of contract work throughout the years.
Was that a bad experience or?
No. I find the video game industry very, as far as job security, to be very volatile. But the people you work with are great. There's really good people out there. They're very skilled, very talented people, and they're just genuinely great people out there. And there's a ton you can learn from them, and I've learned some from them. That's where I got some of my stuff, or like some of my where I learned a bit from them.
Does Austin, Texas have a pretty good community for that?
It does. It's starting to, or not starting to, it has been. It's been growing for a while. I used to go to the IGDA meetings here, which is the International Game Developers Association. I've fallen off from that, but I'm going to start doing that again now that I have a car that can actually do things.
Those are handy.
Yeah, I had a car before this, but it's I used it to get to and from work, and that was about it. So
I know what that's like. I went without a car for a year, and it made everything just 100% harder to do.
Yep.
So let's go back. Let's go back to the past and talk about what originally got you into wanting to make games.
So my start actually came from the Commodore 64. I played things like Dig Dug. That was the main one. And I did play a couple arcade games. Like my mom, my parents they'd go to places and they'd bring me along with them. In a lot of these bars, a lot of these places they'd go to, they had their arcade. So my mom would give me a handful of tokens and I'd get the high scores. So I played things like Galaga and stuff like that. And then, and I remember on the Commodore 64, there's one of those things I remember that whenever I want to change games, it's not as easy as just put a disc in and all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know my way around a computer back then. I was like three or four, and so every time I wanted to change games, I had to call my dad and be like, hey, I want to change this game. And he'd have to do the whole thing. So finally he showed me, you know, the whole C:\ thing to run the software. And so eventually I could just do it on my own. So I had all the games on my, we didn't have that many, we had about eight or so games. Dig Dug being like the main one that I played.
Dig Dug is before my time. So I did not Dig Dug.
No. And then the Nintendo Entertainment System was after that. And Mario and the Zelda games, those two games specifically, and Castlevania, a little bit of that too, changed my perspective on games. I was like, holy shit, look at these things. Like, this is amazing.
You noticed it more as like an art form after that, right?
It started to become something else.
Something that you wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, so it was about probably when I was eight is when I started doing, seven or eight when I started doing this, I started like just drawing out my own maps. And at first they were inspired by Mario, and then they kind of just became their own thing. So of course, like, my only frame of reference was those things that I played, but then I started thinking, okay, let's see what else I can do.
Is that when you started noticing, like, I mean, was that like a big thing to know, like, hey, I'm copying essentially Mario, but then now I'm not, because it's my own thing. Was that, because I know for me, like, when I was just making films and stuff early on, it was just weird thing, because you start by copying the things that you see, but then you notice, oh, wait a second, something's different here. I'm creating something of my own.
Yeah, I think a lot of us start in the disadvantage too, but a lot of my stuff started very derivative, and even Distorted Travesty is very derivative work. And it, of course, it veers into its own thing, but it's like it's based in that. And yeah, it did start very, very much like that with my early drawings, and then they would become their own thing. And then there was another game that on the NES that was called Ninja Gaiden, and between the levels, it would have these like cutscenes where the characters speak. Have you ever played the first Ninja Gaiden game?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, well, maybe we'll link it to a video sometime. And it had like, and it was just mostly like 2 or 3 framed images, and they'd have text on the screen. But it started to incorporate a lot of story, and then that also further progressed my thoughts on like what video games could do. I thought, oh man, this is like, not of course, not really movie quality, but it's kind of like that. It's like where it's telling a story, and so that started that, and then yeah. So, of course, the super.
So why video games? I guess over a different art form.
So I think because I was so involved in video games back, and I didn't really understand why I was so brought to them. But later on, I realized that it's the interactivity level. No other form of media can really immerse the audience as well as video games can, at least in the interactive department.
And you like that. You like having that freedom to explore in that way.
Yes. Oh, very much so.
So is it for you? Is it more that interaction between the people that are experiencing it, and you know, you designing it? What is the satisfaction from that sort of pushing you, you know, to continue? Just to see, like, when you get a reaction, like a Let's Play video, somebody does that. Does that just really fuel your fire and make you want to continue? And
It actually does, in both positive and negative feedback. Criticism is always a good thing, but more specifically to that question, yes, which is surprising. I started the first Distorted Travesty game, not with any sort of expectations of people playing it. I was just making it for myself, really. I was like, oh, like I'd make a kind of game that I'd want to play, and I was just making, I'm like, oh, this would be great here, or this would be funny here, and this would be cool here. So it was just these things, and that's kind of why it started with the whole, not specifically, but that's one of the reasons it uses the whole fan thing, or the whole sprite rips, like, ah, this would be funny with this thing here. Like the first level had this little Mega Man head, like a one-up thing just in the tiles. You couldn't get to it, but everybody stopped and looked at it. I noticed, like, everyone, like a lot of people were like, can I get that? Like, what does it do? Because it's be sitting there flashing, there's no way to get to it and stuff like that. And I didn't do a lot of that later on in the game, but it was just more of, oh, I want to do this thing, I want to see what I can do, because I started getting well versed in Game Makers, which is what I used for Distorted Travesty in its code base. And it's thought, oh man, I have so much power at my fingers here. Like, there's just things that I can do with this, and I just want to see where it would go.
Do you art at all?
So when I was in school, I was actually brought up to do 3D art and animation, of course. And I don't like animation. I don't know, I just didn't really have a passion for it. But I remember this one class we had to do animation. I did this, I did this walk cycle. And I remember the teacher, he goes, oh, this walk cycle is excellent. And he put it up on the board on this and showed everybody. He's like, he's like, I haven't seen a walk cycle this good in 3 years. This is what we need to have right here. And I was like, oh God. I was like, oh no, no.
It's your calling.
And then he looked at me and he goes, now that I know you can do this, I expect a lot from you.
Uh-oh.
Like, shit. There was at one point I almost failed that class. Because I feel like he graded me harder.
Really? Just because you set the bar so high for yourself.
Yeah, like, and I couldn't reach the quality of that walk cycle.
It's still haunting you to this day?
Yeah, just I could not reach it. And some of my other animations were good, but they weren't like the great quality of that was. I remember I did this little like punch kick cycle with this model. He gave us like a model to work with, and so I did that, and it was rigged really well. I just made it, and it looked decent, but it was not the fluidity of that walk cycle. And he gave it like a C on that. And where somebody else who did a slightly mediocre one, they got like a high B, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh no.
He's like, at the same time, I kind of enjoyed that though. It was like, you know, he's trying to push me, but I didn't really have a passion for it. It just, that animation just came out and it just did so good. I don't know what it was that about that thing. It just flowed well. But what I really enjoyed doing there was texture mapping. I enjoyed making my own environments. I used 3ds Max and I used Photoshop for my textures, and I enjoyed just putting all that stuff together, especially the texture mapping part.
So, and then, but you program as well, but would you say you're more of a level designer than programmer?
That's actually what I, so I, early on I figured out how to use the Unreal Engine, and I spent a bazillions amounts of hours just building levels in that. And then eventually I worked towards the code. UScript is awful, but it's okay.
That's like a diss on UScript?
It is. That's okay, we don't use that anymore.
That's good.
So I do mostly code now as opposed to art. And I find I enjoy that. But what I enjoy the most is like the middle ground of, I enjoy the high level art, the high level code, and scripting and level design. I enjoy just building levels themselves and the scenarios that happen within them. That's what I enjoy the most.
So if you were on a team, what would you choose to do? Level design or code?
I'd want to be one of the level designers, one of the guys in the tools building the environments for the players.
Yeah.
Not the assets themselves or the props, but using the props that the artists make. That's what I'd want to do. And then, of course, sometimes requesting a prop, be like, I want this, and hoping to get it made.
So is Distorted Travesty your first game that you've created?
No.
What was the first game?
I don't actually remember the first game that I made from start to finish. There's a lot of very small games that I made in school, some in Flash. Actually, a lot of them were in Flash. I used a bit of RPG Maker back in the day. The PC version, it was called, I think it was RPG Maker 2003. I used quite a bit of that back in the day. I've used some Unity, of course Unreal, and then Game Maker has been the big thing lately. I don't know. I don't know what the first game was anymore. It was shitty. The first 10 games anyone makes are shitty, and you just got to get through those.
But that's the first with anything, pretty much. First 10 things you're gonna make is it's gonna be pretty crappy.
Yeah, I have made some big things before Distorted Travesty. They aren't very well known, and I would like to keep it that way. It's out there on the internet somewhere. I'm not going to say the title of it here, but it's
So your fans are listening, and they're going to have to track it down. That's your goal, is to track down Joe's old games.
Yeah, it's the homework here.
And you'll embedded somewhere in this audio file, you'll find the website you can go to. So get cracking, guys.
I wonder if it even is anywhere other than my Dropbox.
Oh, there we go. First hint.
There is. I did give it to somebody, though, and they are putting it in sort of some sort of like indie bundle thing.
Really?
So, yeah, I don't know when that's going to happen, but it's there.
Are you thinking about doing that for Distorted Travesty at all?
If someone asks me, sure. It can't be for sale.
It can't be for sale, though.
No, like if that bundle is going to be for sale, then I'm going to say no to that, because like there was never the intention to make anything off of this. It was just for fun,
right?
And education, just learning stuff from it, which I've learned a ton.
Yeah. So your next game, you have no idea what style of game it's going to be, what genre.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I have some ideas, but I don't know exactly which one. The one I would really love to make, I've talked about on the blog, is this thing called the bird game. But I don't have the resources to make that right now. There's no way I could do that on my own.
So you have a, for those that don't know, you love birds. You have this bird thing going on.
I do.
When did that start?
Apparently that, so it only started within the last few years, maybe the last like four or five years, that it really started catching or coming back up again. My big thing is grackles and crows, but I looked back on some things that I'd done, and even some of my, like my own media that I'd made, and just things that I've been involved in. And apparently birds have been a thing for a while. I just didn't realize it.
Like they subconsciously you were into birds for like a long time? Or?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, and the third Disturbance Travesty has a lot of birds. There's birds all over the place.
Did the first one have it at all?
No.
So you just over the course of the games, you've just been throwing in birds. And...
Yeah, there are birds everywhere in the third game.
Let me ask you this. Is there, without, I hope it doesn't spoil it, but is there a bird boss battle?
No. No, but you do have birds that will, they're kind of scattered around the world. And if you run towards them with Jerry, then they'll fly off. And if they get, and as they're flying off, if they get close enough to an enemy, they'll dive bomb the enemy.
Jerry, he's the main guy.
He's one of the two protagonists in the third game, and then there's also Claire, who is the other protagonist. They don't run from her for whatever reason. They just don't.
Because Claire loves birds, and they love her.
Sure, there you go. That was actually a suggestion from someone, and I thought, you know, let's do that. That's an easy little thing there. That's just an interesting thing, and then who knows? Maybe the players will figure out some weird meta thing with that. I doubt it, but you know, you never know.
They might, you know, fan fiction, they could just really get into that, dude. They could really take off with that idea.
Claire does have like her jumping animation has wings, because that's just the sprite I use, so there you go. She's one with the birds.
The characters, your story, does that, I mean, I was joking fan fiction, but I mean, is that, does anybody, like, you mentioned at one point where somebody was maybe thinking about like wanting to continue, or you'd be okay with that if somebody like made a sequel or a prequel or whatever to your games with your characters.
I had mentioned before that while I'm done with Distorted Travesty after this, if someone else wants to mess with the world, I'm totally fine with that.
Is that something you'd like to see?
Yeah, that would be interesting to see someone else's take on it. I would hope that they don't use those two characters, though.
Yeah,
I don't want them using, because there's so much more you could do with there's a lot more with the world.
You introduce, I mean, the world itself. Are you expanding on that throughout this third game?
Yes.
Just the whole mythology of that and how it works.
Yeah, so there's plenty of people could do with that with plenty of other characters.
So this third one, we've talked a little bit before about how you there's some levels in it that sort of are way different, without giving anything away, but they're sort of artistically different and sort of come from more of this storytelling atmosphere and maybe a little bit of your past and that's different though. You've never done that with the other games.
No, I didn't. Like, there was not really a lot of myself as far as who I am, my thoughts on things. It was just, oh, let's just make a game. And so you'll see a lot of, especially the last few chapters, you'll see a little bit of my own thoughts in there. Like, some of the scenes will mean something or will, yeah. And there's a specific scenario that is not necessarily about me, but more about somebody else close to me and something that they had gone through when they were young.
Will people know what you're talking about when they play it?
I think they will. If they hear this and then they play the game and they see that scenario, oh, they will. It's a little more intense as far as the themes going on there than the rest of the game, especially since it's very what would you say? It doesn't really have much to do with the Strait of Travesty itself. It focuses on actual real world themes.
It's more about it's
so
more of you, and then that's the same thing with the birds. It's like it's kind of you.
Yeah.
Is that just a natural progression for you to be doing that, or is that just like you wanted to change it up?
I think it's a little bit of both. Because I knew definitely early on that the third game's tone would change, and I wanted to try something a little different with it as far as storytelling goes. And I even said that before even starting at that, I wanted to do a little more with storytelling with the third game. So, and it feels like a natural progression. And I kind of like seeing that too. I like when I play other people's games, I like to see parts of themselves in that. And I like to see like artist growth within people's works. There's a series, it's not a game, but it's a series online called Arby and the Chief. And it's just using these little Halo figures, and they're just playing Halo 3. And it's just this vulgar thing. You have the Arbiter, who's this more what the artist is, and then Chief, which is kind of like this, what he views as just silly internet shenanigans.
Yeah.
Like all the idiots that he is run into on the internet. But it's like a 7-season thing. And I watched the whole thing. I saw it from the beginning. Like, my roommate Jerry had introduced me to the very beginnings of it. And while he didn't continue with it, I did. And as you see these different seasons go on, you start to see an evolution with the writing and the way the characters interact. And more what I thought was interesting with that is how the artist evolves, and you see his progression as a writer.
Are you talking about Red versus Blue?
No. This is something called the RB and the Chief.
Oh, okay, but it's like they use the same thing as Red versus Blue.
They do use some in-game footage for when the characters are playing the game, but when they're not in the game, when they're not actually playing the game, he's actually using like action figures.
Okay.
And he's doing like filming with his like camera and tries to make sure you don't see his hand when moving the action figures around.
Right.
But it's a really cool thing though. Like, I just thought it was really, really interesting to see how the artist himself grows with the character, or like in continuing this story. And that was the most interesting part to me, was seeing that. Of course, the story itself was really interesting, seeing how that went along, but him as a writer, seeing him grow, that was really cool.
Do you feel like you've grown a lot as a writer?
A little bit. I'm definitely getting better at it. Writing is not my strong point. It's one of the reasons I'm trying it. It's one of the reasons I do role plays as well, just to help my writing out. And, of course, it's fun. I think more that I've grown as a designer and being more aware of what's good and bad in games.
Is that something that you'd like to do more of, or do you kind of just want to stick with the level design?
No. I want to keep going at it all.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's exciting. So let's see. You're going to be done with the, is there a date? Do we have a date yet?
Not just yet.
This is the show to do it. This is the show to release, this would be the release date.
Release date. When I get very, very close, or when I finish the final level, is when I'll announce the release date. So what I'm doing is, when that's done, I enter a closed beta state with my testers. I'm going to play through the game. I'm going to fix up a bunch of stuff that I've kind of just left hanging there, and I'm going to give them that version. Then, of course, I'll be playing through the game again, and then at that point, the game is feature locked, and they're going to find all the things that they would like, you know, just give me a list of things that they find wrong with it and stuff like that, and then I'll run through those things, and then when I fix all that, that's essentially when the game is released, or when I address as much of that as I feel is necessary. Before I start that beta phase is when I'm going to announce the release date, and it's probably going to be about a month after that. So I think late June
late June.
Yeah, mid to late June is probably going to be the release date.
Okay, you heard it here, folks. It's going to be late June. Joe Wilson said. And if he doesn't turn it out, you gotta get at him. Gotta tweet.
You could tweet him. Hey, where's the game?
Mean tweets.
Hey, bro, where's the game?
Where's the game, bro? You said on the podcast, and there's no game. Well, I mean, it's super exciting. I can't wait to play it. I really want to dive in, and I haven't played the first two, but I'm waiting because. So if you haven't played the first two, your game has a previously on, and it's going to sort of go through that. Do you want people to play your first two before playing this one, or?
Yes and no. That's the no part of that is why I'm going to include a previously on type of deal, so they can kind of get caught up. They won't know all the little shenanigans that went on, some of the in jokes, and some of the, like the interactions between specifically the antagonist and the protagonist. They may be a little lost with certain elements there, but overall, like, they'll get an idea just reading the previously on thing.
And that should get you caught up to this third one, the final entry.
Yeah, because some people may not like the mechanics of the first two games, specifically the first one. It's just so out there, and they may enjoy the third one. And if they can't fully enjoy the third one because it's the lack of knowing what's going on with the story, that would suck. Because the third game is just so much more polished than the other ones.
Yeah. So if you're up for it, play the first two. But if you're just a casual gamer, start with Distorted Travesty 3. Now, is it called Distorted Travesty 3? Is there like something other? Is that just the Distorted Travesty 3? Or...
The subtitle is Saved Game.
Saved Game.
Yeah. I don't know if I would say Distorted Travesty 3 is a casual game. I'd say if you're going to play the first game, play it. There's difficulty settings on the first game. I would say play the first game on the normal setting, which is where it was meant to play. The third game's difficulty lies between the normal and hard setting of the first game. Roughly around there. Like its standard difficulty.
There's
no choice.
Is there a choice in the third game?
No, that's what I mean. Like, there's no choice in the third game. The difficulty is roughly around a little below the hard mode in the third game or in the first game, and it goes up and down. Of course, there is an easy mode that the player can unlock in the first game or in the third game rather, after they die enough times. It doesn't definitely cry style. It just unlocks it for them, and it decreases the amount of damage the player takes by half, but it also makes it so they don't gain experience from bosses, enemies don't drop money. There's a bunch of little like things. It's mainly like the idea of the easy mode in the third game, and it'll explain that to the player, is you're having trouble with this one spot and you just can't seem to get past it. So you can throw it down to easy mode during that segment, and then you can put it back on the normal setting if you want, which is the hope, because it penalizes really, really hard for putting it on easy mode.
Oh, okay. So if you're a hardcore gamer, go out there, play it. If you're not a hardcore gamer, play it anyway. You can go to distortedtravesty.blogspot.com, which you need to, man, you need to get on that, and you need to make a distortedtravestyjust.com.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, go to that, and you're on. Throw us some links. What do you got? Twitter.
Yeah, you can see at Zephyr Burst on Twitter.
That's ZePHYRBURST, and I'll have those links on our podcast page.
Cool. And I can throw you on that page. I'll give you like the YouTube channel, which you can find all of that on the blog as well, but I'll give you those links after this as well,
of those Let's Plays.
You can actually find the Let's Plays on the blog as well, yes.
Okay, great. Yep. And if you go to that blog, don't go to Squirrel Spider. That was a mistake
terrifying.
I made.
It's pretty terrifying. Actually, it's adorable.
It's not. It's not.
I think it is.
Just don't click it. Okay. Don't click it. It's a mean, mean thing to do to somebody that has arachnophobia.
And if they're deathly afraid of squirrels.
That too, which I am. squirrels well, and spiders.
I don't apologize for that, because you knew what you were going into. It clearly marks it as the squirrel spider.
That's true. It did. And I said, huh, what's that? But I thought it was a video game that you designed. It was not.
See, if you're deathly afraid of spiders and squirrels, I don't think you should be clicking on a link that says that, especially when you think it's a game. Like,
you heard it here first.
Like,
Joe
if you've got
doesn't I mean, think you should click on squirrel spider if you're afraid of squirrels or spiders.
That's right.
I agree.
I mean, it's all right there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Usually, what happens with on the Talk Talk with Dylan is after the interview, our guests go on to play a song. So, Joe, do you have a song you want to play?
I actually don't. I totally forgot about that, and I listened to your stuff, and I should have known. That's I should have known.
Did you play an instrument?
I played the bass clarinet in school.
Bust it out, man!
Because I definitely have a bass clarinet on hand.
We'll get you one. We'll fly you in one. We got a production budget of
that's true.
That includes flying in, favoring a clarinet.
Yeah, a clarinet or a bass clarinet.
Or a bass
clarinet. Oh, either one. Either, I can play both.
Really?
I can play, yeah. I mean, that's they're just, the bass clarinet's just an octave lower. It's the same keys from what I remember. So.
Well, that's very impressive.
Oh, yeah. Play them songs.
Play them songs. All right. Well, thank you again. Thank you for being on the show. Again,
hey, thanks for having me.
Distorted Travesty, Joe Wilson. Go play his game when it's coming out. Check it out.